Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for December the 4th, 2017. This is David Corey, along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Good evening, David. How are you tonight? Tonight we do have a special guest, Lydia Caton, who will discuss several interesting topics tonight, including life in the Navy, the VA's Veterans Choice Program, as well as the Veterans Treatment Courts, a fairly recent development across the country. But first, I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. Now back to David and our special guest.
Yes, thank you, Richard. As you said, our special guest tonight is Lydia Caton. Lydia served on active duty in the United States Navy for 20 years. She retired in 2006. During her long career, she served on a number of ships, including two submarine tenders, the USS McKee and the USS Dixon, as well as two aircraft carriers, the USS John F. Kennedy and the USS George Washington. She traveled the world on multiple deployments with stops in dozens of countries. Since her retirement from the Navy, she has worked for Home Depot, Florida Youth Academy, General Dynamics, and most recently for Veteran Choice, a VA contractor which administers the VA's Veteran Choice Medical Program. She also does volunteer work for the Veterans Court in Hillsborough County, Florida. She earned a bachelor's degree in business management from Everest University. She is our guest on the Veterans News Hour tonight to discuss several topics, including her life in the Navy, the VA's Veterans Choice Program, and the Veterans Treatment Court. So, without further ado, let's welcome Lydia Caton to the Veterans News Hour. How are you tonight, Lydia?
I'm fine, thank you. Good evening, veterans. Good evening, good evening, good evening. It's a pleasure to spend an hour sharing my experience and hope to learn something from you all, and I hope to share my experience also with you all.
Well, that's wonderful. Lydia, let me start by asking you to tell us a bit about yourself and your military career in the Navy, such as, you know, what motivated you to join the Navy? Where did you start your career?
I came to the United States when I was 13 with my two brothers and sister. The last four kids came, my mom brought us to the States in 1972 from Trinidad and Tobago. And we came here to join my two older brothers and my parents who were already living in the States. And it was awesome. In the sense of we were excited. We couldn't wait to come to the United States. It's the land of opportunities, and it was just exciting. We had lots of challenges, of course, because here we were in a different world, and our parents expected us to be very much like West Indian children, which is a whole different mindset. And here we were living in the United States, and we wanted to be more like American children who have opinions. And so I truly can say to children who come from that kind of background, you are not alone. I joined the Navy when I graduated from high school in 77 and joined the Navy in 79. I actually joined the Navy trying to get away from a boyfriend that was a little bit too possessive. And that's why I was desperately trying to get in the Navy. I saw it was going in a little violence, and I was trying desperately to get away from it.
I see. And where did you start your service in the Navy?
I went to boot camp in Orlando, and my first duty station was NAS Miramar, which is now Marine base, but it was originally a Navy base.
I see. And tell us about, I mentioned in the introduction that you served on many ships. Can you tell us more about those ships? What was life like serving on those ships? Where did you go on your many deployments? Those kinds of things.
My first ship was the McKee, and then I went, I did split tour on the McKee because of my pregnancy, and I went on the Dixon to finish up my short sea duty. And the McKee took us on 6 months, went on a 6 month deployment. On my first 6 month deployment, got my sea legs. It took quite a few years to get my sea legs. I was one of these people who, every time the ship pulled in or pulled out, I was hooked up on some IVs. So it took a few years.
I see. And for those of us, I served in the Air Force, but those of us and in the listening audience that never served in the Navy, what was life like? And including not just on the two submarine tenders that you served on, the McKee and the Dixon, but also the two aircraft carriers. What was life like for you?
Life was very challenging because when I first came in the Navy, it was a total different Navy. It was the Navy that we did a lot of drinking, we did a lot of smoking, we did a lot of, we didn't have urinalysis at the time. And so then I got out the military, and that Navy was sexual harassment was unbelievable rampant at that time. I know sexual harassment is a subject that is hot on the wire these days, but
yes.
It has always been a part of the military. It has always been a part of my military career, and almost the end of my 20 years, it was still part of my military walk.
I see. You joined the Navy in the late 70s, and you said it was a different Navy than today. Can you tell us about some of those changes? What life was like in the Navy back in the late 70s when you joined? For instance, you know, the ships that you sailed on. You know, what was the daily routine for you? You know, back when you first joined, and then later in your career when you were serving on the aircraft carriers.
Okay, I was a MS. That was our name at first, mess specialist. I was the junior sailor on the board that made the decision. They sent me to Hawaii to make the decision to change our name to culinary specialist. And they did tell us it was going to take 10 years, and it took 10 years to change the name to culinary specialist. Now, being a cook on the ship, as a young person in the military, all you get to say is how high. You got to do all the dirty work. You have to plead and beg for them to train you to do to allow you to do different things. And so I was always bargaining. I was a very hard-headed person. Like, you're not going to take advantage of me. At times, I was very naive, and because I came from a very strict home, I didn't really have a lot of knowledge about things. And then, so it took a while for me to understand the way things were. But in the military, being a cook, I was blessed enough to get to go to culinary arts school. I learned everything management when it comes to running the barracks, ordering furniture, food, everything. I could run. I'm trained in the military to run a hotel.
Wow.
And all aspects of running a hotel. I am trained, and I have many certificates in all aspects of that. That's what our rate consisted of. And that's what we did on the ship and ashore.
I see. Now, what I've been told and read is that, life, and on these ships, often in a certain way is kind of centered around, the mess hall. In other words, it's very important for everyone to be fed well. It's good for morale, but it also means really long hours and a lot of stress for the people working in the kitchens. Was that what your experience was like?
Yes. Well, they're not called kitchen. They're called galleys.
Okay, galleys, yes. Okay.
And that's the Navy way. And our ships, on the carriers, we work, we were open. Our mess hall was open 23 hours a day. On an average day on the carrier, we served over 15,000 meals in a day.
Wow.
Okay. I was responsible for, attached to my main command was a Hilo squadron out of Jacksonville when I was on the carriers. And we would, the air wing would fly onto the ship and we would become part of the ship crew for the 6 month deployment or the six weeks or how long we were going out to accompany the carrier crew. And then we became a part of the crew. And I worked in the officers' mess, and I also worked in the general enlisted mess, running the galleys. I had 6 mess areas to be responsible for, and we were open 23 hours a day.
Lydia, I have to ask you this question. When you're serving 15,000 meals every day, how many people were in the were working in the galley to do that? Hey, Richard, as soon as we get her back on, we can then talk further about the issues of sexual harassment that she started to bring up, as well as then we'll talk about the Veterans Choice Program, which is on a lot of people's mind nowadays with what's going on in Congress. And then we'll talk about the Veterans Court Program. For those of you that are just tuning in, our guest tonight is a Navy veteran, Lydia Caden, who served 20 years in the Navy, served on a number of different ships, including 2 aircraft carriers, the John F. Kennedy and the George Washington. And she's sharing with us some of her her experiences in the Navy. And we're also going to have her talk about several other hot topics right now for veterans.
I wonder why, David, it took him 10 years to get him to call them culinary specialists.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, that was an interesting thing, because in preparing for the show, I was doing some research, too, to learn more about that that career field, and I noticed that too.
That's hard of a thing to do.
Well, I think you know what it is in the military is tradition. If it was called, mess management or mess services for the, that's something that went back many, many decades. And to a civilian, it might seem like an odd name, but every service has its own culture, its own traditions. As she pointed out to me, they refer to
your guest is back
to them as galleys, not kitchens. But in laypersons, we know what that would mean. So, how we doing, Doug?
Welcome back, Lydia.
Okay, I wanted to address what you just was talking about, the 10
yes.
years. Well, you
yes.
have to take in consideration that we have schools that it and everything and books and our examinations, everything is circled on our race, the name. It's around everything in the military has to be changed. When you make a change, it's not just like changing something on paper. It's thousands and thousands of people that the change has to be made for. So it takes time.
It's kind of like steering a battleship, huh? It doesn't steer very sharply. It takes time. But Lydia, thanks so much for sharing some of your insights about what it was like serving in the Navy. We're going to come back to that topic a little later if we have time. But I want to hand it over to Richard Hurley, because he wants to talk to you further about a topic that you started to mention a few minutes ago, and that's the current topic of sexual harassment. Go ahead, Richard.
Thanks, David. Yes, Lydia. Just a little background. We have several, actually more than several, female and some male veterans who are struggling with PTSD as a result of military sexual trauma. And, you know, it's quite unfortunately, quite prevalent. And it is a major issue in the media. The societal problems of sexual harassment and sexual assault. And we've recently seen many famous celebrities fired for reports of misconduct. Politicians, they're hitting the top of the list as well. I think everyone knows that the military has had its share of problems in that regard as well. Can you share with us your perspective on that subject, having served in the Navy for 20 years?
Well, I think the military have for years have pretended it does not exist, or us, the females, are just making a big deal out of nothing, that we should be grateful for what the men give us or allow us to do in the military, that we should tolerate the mistreatment or the disrespect. My first experience with it was as a junior sailor. My first duty station, when my senior personnel kept putting his hands on my private parts, I would be walking and he would put his hand between my leg, touch my upper parts. And I was not the only female this was happening to. And
yeah.
When we made a complaint, it was on deaf ear. It was like, what are you complaining about? I wrote up a request to be transferred, and I recall, I always think back about this, how bold he was, that he balled up the tick in his hand and called me to the office, and when I came in the office, he took the tick and threw it in my face and told me, get back to work. He'll talk to me later. Now, I did go up the chain of command, but the chain of command, it was a waste of time. So after a while, I was in fear of getting in trouble. I was always scared. I don't want to get in no trouble. I don't want to go to mass. Oh, please, oh, whatever. I don't want to go to mass. And I had moved out in town without permission because I couldn't stand living on the base anymore. And I was late for work. And I came into work, and the senior personnel came up to me and told me to open my hands, and he put a key in my hand and told me to meet him in the lodge, in the barracks. I do apologize. In the barracks after lunch. I was so scared. I was like, oh, my God, I'm going to have to sleep with this old man because I was scared because I really didn't understand, to be quite honest, I didn't know what I was going to do, okay? Because I didn't want to get in trouble and go to mass, and I didn't want to sleep with this old man. But in the process of me being a nervous wreck, one of my coworkers asked me what was wrong, and I told him what was going on. And he said, well, you're not the only person who keeps talking about him. And he took the key and told me he'll be back. And then he came back and told me, go to the barracks after we finish serving breakfast, go to the barracks and don't tell anybody. So when I went to the barracks, there was an ensign. I will never forget Ensign England for her courage and what she did for me that day. She took me, we went. I will always refer to it as us junior sailors refer to the officers as wearing scrambled eggs with their white uniform with all the yellow on their hats. We call it scrambled eggs. And I walked in the office with all of these scrambled eggs. I had never seen most of these officers, only one officer I knew. And they started asking me some questions. And then they split up in a group and in three different groups and questioned me. And then they asked me who else at the galley this was going on with, and I told them that the other female's name, and they made some phone calls, and then came back and told me, go back to work, do not tell anybody where I have been, and they will take care of it. This was by dinner time now, and at that time, the division officer came, and I recall he had tears in his eyes, and he told me come tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock. He told me to go ahead and go home, and that I need to report in at 7:30. I will be transferred. Okay, I never knew what, and then I found out later on the division officer was relieved from his job, but the person who was doing the harassment got to retire. He still kept his job. I really don't know what happened because they don't tell you. Okay, he got to keep his job. I got transferred, and then I had to move back to the galley after they closed all the clubs, and then I had to work for him again. But he could not say anything to me, and he did not. And that was my first experience of sexual harassment. Not everybody get it solved. I will honestly tell you, I don't know if I would have broke down and had sex with that person because my overall fear of getting in trouble was more urgent to me because of how I was brought up. I just didn't want to get in trouble.
That's pretty devastating, you know, and it's really sad when I sit with these men and women who have been, like yourself, traumatized as a result of their service. You know, all you did was you wanted to go in and serve your country, and then to have to deal with that attitude and that culture, which, quite frankly, I'm not sure if it has changed at all in the military. Hopefully, with everything that's going on today in the last 3 months, it's going to finally wake people up on all sorts of industries. And seems like every day you pick up the paper, there's someone else is getting caught. So, what advice do you have for young people who are considering joining the Navy, or for those who already served in the Navy?
I would. When it comes to the sexual harassment, find someone in the military, some senior person, get to know somebody that you can trust. Because situation will arise that you will need to know somebody that you can trust and go to.
Lydia, this is David again. If I could just ask you, when you say people you can trust, what was your perception when you were on active duty? What was your perception about the Inspector General, the EEO office, any other kind of established command structure that theoretically is supposed to deal with sexual harassment and discrimination issues? What was your perception of those entities?
It really depends on if you were on the ship, if you were in a bubble. The facilities is there. Supposedly all of those EOs and all of that situation, it's there. But is it... I don't think it helps because you end up being, you have to prove the other person. Well, to put it nicely, I don't see how it helped. As a senior person, okay, I'll let's say this, you might be the third person I've ever said this to. I found myself going out with some people as a senior person in the military, okay? A whole bunch of us rented these hotels, and it was a lot of us. We were all senior personnel in the military. I don't know who raped me, and I don't know all I know is when I woke up the next morning. I can't tell you what happened. All I know is I was out with some senior people. people my own rank, senior people my own rank. And I was insulted and embarrassed. I for a long time, I blamed myself because how could I have let that happen? I'm senior in the military. I have a lot of junior sailors that answer to me. How could I have let that happen? And for a very long time, that thing ate me up. I was too embarrassed to tell anybody that had happened to me. I was out to sea. I came back on the ship, and I don't even know how I functioned. But I know I never told because I was just too embarrassed that it had happened.
I see.
We have Lydia, we have one client who had a very similar experience, and she's convinced that she was given, I guess what they would call a roofie or something when she was at the bar, and she didn't recall going back to either her place or the guy's place, and then she woke up the next morning in bed with him and had no idea, and she kept that to herself for the remainder of her time in the service, because she didn't know, you know, she didn't know what happened, so she didn't know like what people saw, and unfortunately she's been traumatized to this day that she's severely suffering from PTSD, and we're still fighting her disability claim.
Lydia, if I could go ahead.
I do apologize. I just shared that with my therapist. I just went this year for mental health care because I have not been functioning for a very long time. When I say I have not been functioning, I have been unable to get in a relationship or even have friends. I used to be a very social person. I had a whole bunch of female friends that would have dinner parties at the house. I was very social. And since I came off of that ship, I have been unable to... I long for that person who went on that ship. I long to see that Lydia, because this Lydia has been surviving. This Lydia has been living with shame for so many years, unable to tell anybody what happened to me.
Well, it's a tragedy, and
David, if I may for a second.
Go ahead,
Lydia,
Richard.
I'm listening to your story, and it's horrific, and my heart goes out to you. And one of the things that's going on in today's news about all these women who are now coming forward and bringing up incidences that happened 40 years ago, you have the situation in Alabama with that fellow Roy Moore, and all this other stuff that's going on. And one of the common questions that I hear from people who don't understand situations that you were in, Lydia, is why are you now just coming forward and telling your story, and why didn't you tell it 40 years ago, or not in your case 40 years ago? But can you tell our listeners something about why it takes so long to finally come forward and tell your story?
Because I want to start living. Bottom line is I just want to start living. I'm tired of the panic attacks. I'm tired of being scared. I'm tired of not being able to sleep in my own bed. I'm just tired. I am beyond exhausted. I am beyond wishing to die. I am beyond being empty on the inside. I'm beyond pretending for everybody and hoping that nobody can see how much pain I'm in. I used to drive around in Jacksonville wishing somebody would just hit me. I'm too scared to take my own life because I'm a Christian, but I just wanted to die. I cannot tell you what that pain feels like. You have to have experienced the humiliation of it all. You have no power. Somebody takes it from you. And this is not the first time I was raped. I lost my virginality. I lost it being raped.
Well.
And what's ridiculous about that one was my parents, who put so much fear in their children, was right downstairs when it happened. We were visiting some family friends. And I was so scared. No, I wasn't. I was more scared of my parents, my dad. I just couldn't. I was so scared to let him know what had happened. I was scared of my dad. I can't. It is hard to understand how people could live with themselves after they've done this to somebody. But all I can tell you all is I have been trying to survive. I would say this year is the first time I can tell you all I have been living. All I keep asking my therapist is, when am I going to feel happy? Because I haven't been happy for so long.
Lydia, I know you've been through so much, and I know you also wanted to share with us your thoughts on the VA. I know you've mentioned getting help, and maybe you can tell us more about what you found with the VA, or maybe outside of the VA. But I know you also wanted to talk with us tonight about the Veterans Choice Program. Would you like to share your thoughts, your wisdom about those things?
Well, right now in this country, it's everything about health care. It's strange how I have two sets of insurance, which is TRICARE, which I pay for, very good insurance if they will schedule the appointment, which is very rare. And I have the VA. It took a long time to get here to the VA when I was in Jacksonville. It was almost impossible to get an appointment. So I use TRICARE most. I recently went through the situation with the VA. When I first arrived here in Tampa, the VA did so much for me in 30 days that I could not get done in 2 years, almost 2 years, when I was living in another state. I could not get that care in another state. But when I got here in Tampa, James Haley VA Hospital did so much for me in 30 days. Some people say that's not a good place, but I'm telling you, they did a lot for me in 30 days.
Wow.
Okay. I am battling with them right now because of the surgery that my kidney they just took. I am battling with them about that. But I don't even want to go there with that one. But
right.
But I would say, having insurance doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to get care. And that brings me to the Veterans Choice Program. I worked for the Veterans Choice Program as a temp. I came through a temp company working for the company that carried the Veterans Choice Program. For many vets around the country, it's impossible to get care to the VA. And that's when they came up with this program. The program is good if you know how to work the program. And the VA needs to get more education out to the vet about that program. I don't know why it's a big hush-hush, because before I, when I went to work there, I did not know it existed. That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Yeah, what good is a program if it's not publicized?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I said, I agree with you, Lydia. I said, what good would a program be if it's not publicized, as you were saying? You know, if people, if veterans don't hear about the program, it's not really helping them. What can you tell us more about, from your perspective, working for that contractor that was administering the Veterans Choice Program, what was it like working there? What was it like hearing from veterans? And also, what advice do you have for veterans who are dealing with the VA, as you've dealt with the VA, but also veterans that are dealing with this Veterans Choice Program?
Working there, the people was a lot of fun, but it is a call center, okay? The program does is process for the VA. We don't make any decisions, and the vets are under the belief that the program makes decisions. All decisions is made by the VA, okay? All care is decided by the VA. Now, if you have 10 million veterans and only 1,000 employees, tell me how many people is going to get care.
Right.
When the VA downloads millions of, I'm not saying 1,000, I'm saying millions, because it could say we have 56,000 calls to make today. Okay? One day now, we could have 56,000 calls to make.
Wow.
Or 180,000 calls to make. Okay? And that call center is located across the country. But it's broken up in two. California, Texas, all of them is on one. And New York, Florida, all of it is on the other half. Now, it's impossible for that one company. I don't see how they can take care of all those vets. If you ask me, for me myself, I don't want to use this. I would wait for the VA. I already asked the VA, don't you ever put me in that program.
Wow.
Now, it's a possibility I may still have to use the program. If the VA does not have a particular care for me, then I have no option. If the VA does not have a certain specialty care, then the vets have no other option. Okay? Now,
right.
We do know that they have other programs that they are changing and they're implementing, but they do not tell us about the program. Somehow, I don't know how they put it out, to be quite honest with you. But when we would make outbound calls, veterans would hang up because they would think we are calling them and asking them to identify themselves. Meantime, the VA never informed them that this care was put in the system for them. Just like when I got a phone call for pain management, I didn't know who these people was. I thought it was somebody calling to ask me to get my personal business. I kept hanging up on them. Meantime, it was the VA who put in some care in some system to get me pain management care. No letter came to me. Why would I give some stranger my Social Security number over the phone? I don't know who you are.
Right.
And with the way the us veterans think, we know the VA closes at 5 o'clock. So if somebody calling me on a Saturday or Sunday, there is no way, or after 5, I know it's not the VA. But the VA failed and is continuing to fail to inform veterans that they are putting care in other systems for them to go to civilian providers to get the care. Now,
Lydia, if I could ask you, I'm sorry to interrupt, but let me ask you this. So it sounds, from what you were describing, you were working for a civilian, meaning non-VA contractor, but that contractor was administering this Veterans Choice program, and the VA would make the decisions about care, but then the contractor, the company you were working for, would make calls out to veterans to inform them of care that they weren't aware of, or make appointments to gather information. Is that an accurate understanding?
Yes, sir.
And then, so when you were working, and it was in the call center environment, so you're dealing with veterans for maybe, let's say, half of the United States, from different states, different time zones. So that would be why there might be times when you were calling, might be 8 o'clock their time, depending on what time zone they were in. And so they would become suspicious that it was even the VA calling. What was your experience working in that call center? What advice would you give to veterans so that they might be more successful when they're dealing with the VA or the Veterans Choice Program?
I would definitely want to tell them, first of all, put on all your patience. Put on all your nice caps. And stop talking to civilians as if they were in the military. Civilians have no understanding of ranks. When you retire, rank has no benefits to you when you're talking to a civilian personnel. You need to speak to those people with just as much respect as you want them to give you. I've experienced people, senior people calling and demanding, based on their ranks that they keep giving me, that I need to do what they say and get it done now. Unfortunately, that's not how it works. Lots of those people are young people. I could honestly say, on one hand, after working there for more than a year, I may have 5, maybe 10, if I'm really lucky, days I was not cursed out. That's only days' work.
Wow.
Okay.
Wow.
It's very difficult for that company to keep employees, because veterans, I've been living in pain for a very long time. I've had 2 spine surgeries. L3, 4, and 5, that lower L3, 4, and 5, that pain is merciless. So when I tell you, I understand what it's like to be calling and be frustrated because you're living in pain. I understand. But what you all need to remember is that you're trying to get your care. And in the process of getting your care, you need to have some respect. Respect for the person you're talking to, because that person may not be able to move you up in a line, because there is no line to move you up to. But if we are able to keep employees, if that company was able to keep more employees, they would be better to serve that program. They go to a lot of employees because In a call center, you have the majority of young people. And the disrespect that we go through on the line is unbelievable.
I think that's a great point, Lydia. I think that's an outstanding point that I hope our veteran listeners will take to heart and maybe pass along to other veterans that they know that, yes, it certainly is very frustrating. We know that. I know you know that, Lydia, dealing with the VA in some instances and dealing with the Veterans Choice Program. But they need to realize that cursing out the person on the other end of the phone who's doing their job, trying to help administer the Veterans Choice Program, or that they're a VA employee, is not a constructive way of getting anything done. And as you said before, I think that's, you made an excellent point before, Lydia. As a veteran myself, the military world and the civilian world are two very different worlds. I know that may sound obvious, but one of many aspects of those differences, as you point out, Lydia, is rank structure. In the military, people become so identified based on their rank. And,
yes, sir.
And in the civilian world, rank, as you said, rank means nothing. So that's a point of conflict, and it's a point where a lot of veterans, when they leave the military, that's one of many areas where they have to learn to adjust. And showing that basic respect is so important. So thanks for sharing your insight on that. Now, Lydia, I know Richard Hurley wants to ask you a few questions about another topic that you have experience with, and that's the veterans courts or the veteran treatment courts. Richard, over to you.
Thank you, David. Add to what David just said, what's been your experience with the veterans treatment court?
Well, I was recruited when I moved here to Tampa. My landlord, sister, is a lawyer in the Veterans Treatment Court, and so they immediately recruited me. The Veterans Treatment Court is an opportunity, an excellent opportunity for veterans who have found themselves in some kind of legal situation to go through the program and have it cleaned off of their record. It's an excellent, excellent program. I mean, excellent program. If you know of a vet that is in some kind of legal situation, many states have the program. Some people come pretty far to go to different states to be a part of the program because of the advantages of the program. You have to sign a contract with the program. All of us mentors are of prior military. I'm retired E6. I long to wear that khaki, but it was not my blessing. And I get to work with Colonel, and it is awesome that they treat me right along with, you know, treat me equal. There is not about rank. I know what their rank is. And of course, I'm still in the military mindset. I know that to respect them, which I do. But they treat me, and that was one of my things. I didn't like, all these high-ranked people, what am I going to be bothered with them for? But it's totally different to be a part of it. What you do with the veterans to help a vet to remember, everybody makes mistakes. My dad used to say this one thing, and I always remember it. Tell me your story one time. And after that, I want to know where you're going from here. Don't repeat it to me. And that's what I keep telling when I have to mentor somebody. I tell them, tell me it one time. After that, I want to know, are you willing to work this program? You sign the contract. I didn't make you do any of these things. You sign this contract. Are you willing to work this program to get past this hurdle? Because it's up to you. I'm here to encourage you. I'm here to help you. I'm not just the only one. They help you with jobs. They help you with resume. They help you with bus tickets. Sometimes they give away cars. I mean, name it. This program helps you. If it's rehab, whatever, this program helps you. They find a way to help you.
Well, that's awesome, Lydia. I thank you for sharing that insight about the Veterans Treatment Corps, because in some ways I think it shares something with the Veterans Choice Program, which is I don't think there's enough publicity about the Veterans Treatment Corps concept. I know it is growing around the country. I know from what I've heard and from what I've read that more and more state courts in other states have such courts to help veterans that have got themselves in legal trouble, the criminal justice system. Can you tell us, I know we're about running out of time, so can you tell us go ahead.
Let me jump in for a second, David.
Go ahead.
I was at a dinner the other night in Ocala, and the judge there who heads the treatment court in Ocala and I were talking about it, and he said one of the problems, and I guess this is some of the what we really need to get out to the veterans, is that so many veterans aren't aware of the court, so that when they show up for their initial appearance, so many of them end up just pleading guilty without even knowing that there's this alternative program. Now, where I practiced law for 25 plus years up in New Jersey and New York, you could not take a guilty plea on the first appearance. However, for some reason here in Florida, they will take a guilty plea. And so the veteran who may get a different result through the Veteran Treatment Court ends up with a record simply because he was not aware. Have you ever run into that situation?
I cannot answer on that.
I see.
I do apologize. I don't have enough. You would need to talk to one of the lawyers to get that answer. I do apologize.
I see. Well, we're about running out of time tonight, Lydia. Thank you so much for being on our show. Just before we go, you have any final words of wisdom that you'd like to share to our listeners?
I would like to say to the people who is suffering and have been unable to make a decision to stay alive.
I think that's so important.
Take your power back. Take your power back. Take your power back. Let me say it again. Take your power back.
Well, that's a great point to end on, Lydia. And I'd like to thank you for being on our show tonight. If you like, perhaps you can return to our show in the future to update us on your insights about the various veteran issues that we've talked about tonight. So thank you so much, Lydia, and I hope you have a great rest of the evening.
Thank you very much for the opportunity, and thank you. Good night,
thank you.
Everybody.
Thank you, Lydia.
Good night.
Good night. God bless.
Yes.
God
Richard,
bless
we're about out of time for tonight, so I'll just go ahead and bring us to the closure here. We'd like to thank all our listeners for tuning in tonight to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. We'd like to thank our show sponsors, including American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles Newman of Florida, and Corey and Hurley Law Group. We'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom, and invite our listeners to become show guests, sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our show website, bbsradio.com/TheVeteransNewsHour. So please tune in next week. Same time, same station. We have a special guest next week to talk more about the Camp Lejeune. That's Mike Partain, co-founder of a group called The Few, The Proud, and The Forgotten. Be a great show. Until then, have a great week, and good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on Veterans Issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.